So Charlotte just ran through the members of staff who are on the call, and for the most part, they're listed in the participants room under attendees that you can see on Adobe Connect. I think James Liddell is also name there. Okay. And then the agenda is listed under the discussion notes, or the proposed agenda, I should say.
Comment, discussion, and next steps, and then any other business.
Yes.
So comments on the minutes, presumably, you mean, Denise?
Yes. The first and then, comments and on the LA.
And discussion on the document that you sent out. Is that what you meant?
Yes.
Okay, cool. And also, presumably, Steve, you want to talk about the email that you sent out as well.
Indeed. Does it fall to me to chair this?
I was actually going to suggest that it would be, in my mind, it would be quite a good thing if a GNSO person was prepared to take charge of this committee, if nobody else has an objection to that. But you'd probably have to go through a 6-week process to figure out who, don't you guys?
It's reduced because Dan Reed isn't on the call.
Do you want to think about that, and we'll just get through this meeting, and then maybe
I would be happy not to chair this. I have a another chairing duty coming up, and I don't want to be tired out for it.
So shall we take that as an action item to discuss on the
agenda? Let me chair it, and then what I would like to see, if no one disagrees with it, would be great. We could have a GNSO sort of chair going forwards. I think would be very helpful.
Okay. So if I may, if there are no substantive suggested changes for the notes from the last and first meeting of this group, I'd like to just touch on an administrative issue, if I may.
Okay. So do we have any questions or comments on the minutes? Seemingly not. So go for it, Denise.
So going forward, I'd like to suggest to the group that since we will be recording and posting the recordings publicly of all of the working group calls, I'd like to suggest that we make the notes simpler, capture the general discussion topics and the agreed-upon action items, that we email that out to the group, say, within 3 days of the meeting, to get people's email agreement, and then post that, and then also we have a working, a process whereby we provide any material under discussion or consideration a week in advance of any conference call or meeting. I'm happy to discuss this, but if everyone's comfortable with that construct, we'll move forward with that. This week's call.
I think that would be great.
Okay.
Anybody have a problem?
I hope I haven't preempted anybody's other opinions.
Anyone got a problem with any of that? Because that sounds like it's a workable way forward to me. But Denise, remind me, did we agree how often we were going to have calls? I can't remember.
We haven't, and that's something I think we should discuss the next steps, or we could talk about it now. I think staff suggestion is, depending on how the discussion plays out, probably every 2 weeks. But it's really up to the working group members.
Yeah, let's get through this one, and then we can talk about it at the end. Okay, so do you want to take us briefly through the document, the initial draft breakdown of issues for discussion purposes?
Yes, Margie will do that.
Okay.
And it's being loaded in the Adobe Connect room, and of course you all have it in your email as an attachment. The attachment is called Breakdown of Policy-Implementation.
So this is what we, just for clarity, this is what we asked you guys to do at the end of the last meeting, which is to break out from the experts working group report what you thought was policy and what you thought was implementation, right?
Right. And so we've offered an initial sort of table and breakdown as a stepping off point for the group's discussion.
Mm-hmm.
So this is Margie. I essentially put this together as I went through the expert working group report and tried to identify what areas might be policy and what areas might be implementation. And as we went through that, we realized that there's probably two passes here that need to take place because there's a lot of principles that are in the expert working group report that are pretty detailed, but you really don't need to look at them until you've reached the initial conclusion that the high-level conclusion that there needs to be a policy for the particular principle. So as you walk through the document that I've circulated, this is, again, it's a suggestion. You know, you're free to move around topics into different categories, but we thought that we would try to provide at least a first pass at it. And then if you look at the colors in the table, we tried to lump together the topics that seem to go together. I'll just at a high level go through the tables, but the colors are meant to put together topics that seem to make sense. So for example, now let's look at the first column, the first pass. This is a high-level policy issue. What we're talking about here is in the permissible purposes, you know, that the PDP could look at, you know, what are the permissible purposes for the registration data and who are the users. And once you've established that at the high level, then you know, assuming that's been done, then you go deeper into the second pass, which is the second column, that goes into some of the specific questions on how that policy might be developed and eventually implemented. And the idea with the first pass is that you would do the work for the first pass and before you would start the second pass on all of the topics. So essentially, you wouldn't start the second set of policy discussions until you've completed all of the topics in the first pass, because some of them are by necessity related. In other words, you need to know that you're going to have a policy on gated access, some sort of tiered access, before you go into the next level as to how you classify what might go outside of the gate or might go inside of the gate. So that's the concept behind these columns and this table.
Okay, I'll just have, just for clarity then, Margie, there are two colors on my one, right, blue and gray, is that right?
Right, there's blue, yeah, basically blue and gray.
And it's, your note says within each column, the issues are segregated into five groupings. I got confused because what five groupings are they?
Okay, I guess I could use five different colors. So if you permissible purposes and users would be one, then you'd lump gated access and data accuracy would be two, and then if you further down, data elements.
I got it.
Got it.
Understood.
Okay.
Yep.
Sorry.
No, that's right. Now it's starting to make complete sense to me. Ray, your hand is up.
Yeah, I think I understood the answer to that question, which is the same one I had. So things in with one color, for example, the first blue, horizontal blue, is one area, but the second set has two rows, which are gray, and those are related to each other, or
yeah.
Are they independent of each other?
They're essentially related to each other. So if you're looking at a subgroup that might look
okay,
at this new...
Okay, I don't need an explanation, I just need an answer.
Yeah.
Okay, so that then from a standpoint of processing all of these things, we could at some point break these things into the horizontal groupings. In other words, those could be different tracks. Or must you complete all of one track before you go to the next track? In other words,
Margie?
Let's say say I start with the first one, which is permissible purposes and users. Then I go through and I do the second pass. And then I go ahead, and then the next step would be to do the implementation issues. Could I have that going, and in parallel to that, having another process going, like with the gated access and gated accuracy validators?
I think Margie was suggesting, or Denise and Margie was suggesting, that you do the first pass of everything first, because there are some interdependencies between the decisions you might make in the first pass on the gray that would affect something in the blue in the second pass. Is that right, Margie?
Yes, that's right, because you may identify things. I mean, we're not assuming anything, so you may identify things in the first pass that should be looked at at a deeper level in the second pass. And the suggestion would be you would not do any implementation until the entire second pass is done and that's been essentially approved, because otherwise there's no point. You wouldn't have the policy just on permissible purposes and users.
Okay.
I understand that. What I'm asking is, could I start the row on permissible purposes and users at the same time I started the row on data elements, for example?
It's a good question, Ray, and we were struggling with how to illustrate this
Or is a requirement that we have to do the complete first pass, in other words, do all of the first column, and then once we complete all of the first column, you can then start doing the second passes parallel to each other?
Right. Yeah, that's a great question. And of course, there may be varied opinions on this. What we're suggesting in this table is that you first address the first column, the high-level policy issues, and come to an agreement at a high level on the policies guiding permissible purposes and users, gated access, et cetera, and then address the more detailed policies within each of those areas. In other words, reach agreement at a high level on the big sort of principal areas, and then the second pass would then come into play.
Well, I understand
again, this
the concept of first pass, second pass. What I'm asking is, right, and I agree with, okay, let's do the first column all by itself. Great. Everything in there. But once we complete that level of work, can we gain efficiency by then starting several of the second pass works in parallel?
That's a good question too. Let Denise and Margie think about that for a second, and
it'll impact the way we're going to plan our work, and
Absolutely. How
we may divide the group up, and how we make put meetings together, and a whole bunch of stuff.
Completely agree.
It's important we understand that.
Understood. If we can just put that to one side for a minute and get back to it in a second, because it's a very good question to answer. Steve, I've got Steve, James, Marika, and Lisa. Steve.
Thank you very much. You can hear me?
Yes.
Good. So I think this is an important discussion about how best to proceed here. Let me come at this from another perspective. Each of these paths that have been laid out is, on the surface, looks at it as if there's a specific objective, go ahead and do this, and then when you finish, there'll be success. I think we recognize from this discussion that there'll be some interdependencies, and that's part of what I think is very important. The other thing that I think is very important is to identify the risks. What are the hard questions or uncertainties that have to be identified? I think that would be extremely helpful, and that as we go forward, we can check off or highlight either the ones that are done and taken care of if we're successful, or the ones that remain problematic. As I've indicated in what I said during the meeting and then what I've said in the recent times, two things that I have quite a lot of concern about are the transition plan, for which I think a separate discussion is needed, and then the point that I inserted in my email earlier today is that we are proceeding, this whole venture is proceeding with the assumption that it actually is going to make a positive difference in multiple dimensions. And we have not yet built in any positive feedback, any affirmative feedback that demonstrates to us and to the rest of the community that these things actually are working properly. And just to make the point even stronger, I don't think that the foundations are entirely there, and I think that it's incumbent on us to use this opportunity to help create those foundations. I've taken a pass at this with the on the law enforcement side, which I've been very empathetic with in the past, and I don't think that they're in a position to make the case that these changes we're making are in fact going to do what they claim they will do. And I think that's a very bad position for all of us to be in, for them and for us and the whole community. And then, of course, you have on the other side the registrars complaining that a lot of damage is being done, even with the changes that are being made to who is under the RAA.
So, Steve, it's Chris. I want to have a discussion about the particular essence of what you said in your email. Are you happy to just go through the document first and then come back to that, or would you rather do that now?
No, you're in charge.
All right, well, let's go through the speakers list, and then we'll get back. Once we've dealt with the
actually, Chris, I didn't mean that facetiously. I'm much more comfortable, since I have my head into this as a contributor, if you will. I'm happy for you to be the process manager here.
Okay, so we'll get back to that point once we've dealt with the document, because there are some interesting nuances in there that we can talk about. James, you're next, and then Marie.
And Chris, can you add me to the queue? It's Bruce.
Oh, hello, Bruce. Yes, so it's James, Marika, and then Bruce. James.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks, James speaking. Hopefully you can hear me.
Yep,
all right.
Well.
I'm on a crappy hotel phone. So my question, just a couple of comments and then a quick question, was that I want to make sure that we are cognizant that the pass, the first pass, second pass, could create some of the serialization problems that we saw for the IRTP series of PDPs, where the interdependencies spanned multiple efforts, sometimes that were separated by several years worth of worth of work and turnover and the different folks that were working on them. So I would caution against anything that opened us or created vulnerabilities to that dynamic. And then my question for staff is whether or not these are separable or malleable, so that if we, the first pass, for example, came to some conclusion that an interdependency did not exist, could one of these categories or sections or elements be postponed or even canceled, and then the rest of the project could continue to move on unaffected, or does that kind of bring the whole thing to a screeching halt? And then the third part, and I think this goes to a little bit of what Steve was mentioning, is that the last two boxes here, general cost objectives and model considerations, I think could probably be rolled up into a larger heading called essentially, building the economics, the economic case for this change, and understanding the impact that all of this system would have on the existing ecosystem. The consumers, the producers, who's going to manage this, where does it live, and all of those considerations, I think, could probably be folded under a single heading. So that's just my contribution. Thanks.
Thank you, James. So Denise and Mar, do you guys want to respond to that?
Sure. This is Margie. I think if you read the expert working group report, and Susan, I think, is on the call from the group, and as well Steve and Chris have participated generally. The report says that essentially you have to look at it as a whole, not meaning that every recommendation has to be adopted as is, but that if you take out one of the chunks, and probably affects the desirability of doing the entire system. I can't tell you off the top of my head which ones those would be. I'm not sure the expert working group went there, but there might be a point where if you did not, for example, come up with policies on that address privacy, whether, the entire system is even worth doing, at least from the perspective of the EWG. So there's a little bit of that, but it's not to say that every single principle has to be adopted. They're not saying that either. They're just saying that these high level, that's why we broke out the first pass issues. Those are the big ticket items. And if you're not addressing compliance considerations, or you're not addressing the data elements or the accuracy or even gated access, then everything else, all the other principles don't really make sense.
And what about the second point of rolling up the RDS and general cost objectives?
Yes, I think that makes sense.
Okay, cool. Good. Marika, you're next, and then Bruce.
Thanks, Chris. So this is Marika. I'm still trying to get my head around how this aligns with the conversation we had in Los Angeles on whether or not to, start afresh with a new preliminary issue report or whether to build on the issue report that exists. And I'm trying to understand how the first pass, second pass, and implementation issues fit into that. Is the first pass the kind of idea that those are the issues that are flagged in the preliminary issue report, and then it highlights, what are some of the second pass issues that may need to be considered as well going forward, and that would be kind of the framework that could be used for when the chartering takes place of the working group and implementation issues are more things that are flagged that, down the line the group will need to take into account. Is that a kind of how this is envisioned, or am I getting it wrong?
Margie, Denise?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. Oh, go ahead, Denise.
No, I suspect we were going to say the same thing. I think, and apologies for Marika for not having time to discuss this with you further before the call, but so I think what we wanted to raise for discussion is whether this group can come to general agreement on the sort of first and second pass policy issues and identifying expected implementation issues, and that if there is agreement ultimately within this group that they could then propose that as potentially the content of the issue report, and then talk about the tactics of whether a new issue report, preliminary issue report would be required, or what the best way to move to offer the group's recommendations, and I guess put them into effect if there's broad support for them.
Okay. Marika, did you want to, is that okay? Or do you want to come back with another question?
No, this is Marika. Thanks for the clarification. That helps.
Okay, cool. Bruce, you're on.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. I'll try and sort of respond to a few things different people have said. So firstly, I think the sort of first pass, second pass is the right approach. If you go back to kind of how most organizations manage very large software development projects or large product development projects, you're basically following the same approach. So the first thing you do is agree high-level requirements, which is the first column, and then once you've agreed the high-level requirements, then you flesh out each of those high-level requirements into what I've called detailed requirements or functional specifications. So it's a pretty standard industry sort of software development approach. On the first level requirements, I think that's important that that's done almost in a sprint. You want to be kind of time-based and say, okay, here's a six-month sprint. Here's a project plan to agree those high-level requirements. And I think, as others have mentioned from the working group, I think you've got to sort of look at them together. And then the second-level requirements, they're ones that are probably more amenable to using working groups like we did with the new GCLD program. So we had a working group on reserve names, which was very successful. We had a working group on IDNs, which was successful. And in each of those working groups, you had much more specialized people. So for the IDNs, we had lots of people from Asia that were involved in trying to implement Asian languages. You know, it's a much more technical, specialized group. The reserve names group had a lot of people that were looking at things from a technical and geographic perspective as to the policy for reserve names. So I think the next level requirements is quite amenable to specialized working groups. But picking up James's comment, again, those working groups have got to kind of work in sprints, so that they're kind of working to a similar time frame. And then you bring those outputs back, and then you check, does that change the high-level requirements in any way? And as James said, maybe a working group decides that something's just either not feasible to do from a policy perspective, or economically it's going to be too expensive. and therefore not justified. To pick up Marika's comment, yes, I think these columns of requirements feed into the preliminary issues report. I think that needs to be reissued. But it's reissued with the concept of the high-level policy issues and the next-level policy issues. I think they basically form the preliminary issues report. On the economic model, I think that's critical, because this is going to be an expensive system to implement. And so we need to be clear on basically how the cost model and the, I guess, cost recovery model works, two separate things, really. One is identifying where the significant costs are, and two is identifying how those costs are recovered. And if you think about the new GT&E program, we basically, a lot of the economic model was developed after the fact, but we had an economic model for what the application fees would be, and we had an economic model for the cost of each of the dispute processes and how the costs would be recovered. So for particular dispute processes, you know, the cost might be shared between two parties, or the party requiring the additional evaluation paid the cost, whatever. So I think we've got to start building that cost model and cost recovery model at the same time we do the high-level requirements. It doesn't mean you have every cost specified, but you might want to have orders of magnitude. You know, this is going to be a dollar a query, or the accreditation process is going to be $10,000 per accreditation, whatever it is, just so that there's some concept of the economic model. Picking up Steve's comment, one of the other things I think we've learned from the UGTLD program is we're only now establishing the measures, pretty much after the first part of the program has been implemented, and then we're about to do reviews. So again, I would agree that a risk analysis should actually be probably part of the issues report, just some of the high-level risks that might be in implementing each of the policy areas. And also I think we need to establish measures, and some examples of measures I think would be good in the issues report as well. Because I think it's critical. How do we know something's successful? What are some of the critical measures that would be associated with each of the policy topics? I think should be in the issues report as well. So hopefully I've covered off most of the comments people have made, but I think they've all been good comments.
What you have to do now, Bruce, is go away and make it all happen.
Yes.
okay, everybody, I've just got a couple of points, and then Steve, your hand is either up for a new one or still up.
Apologies, I'll pick it down.
No problem. Denise, Margie, Bruce's description of the process, I think, would be worthy if you can listen to the recording of actually doing a kind of like a diagram.
Yes.
Go ahead, Denise.
Yeah, no, I'm just agreeing with you, and also, as Lisa Pfeiffer has suggested, I think a flowchart,
flowchart
for people to look at would be really useful.
Cool. Then secondly, on the issue report, so if I understand it correctly, and I'm not used to necessarily as used to the GNSO process as Bruce and everybody else on the call is, but if I understand it correctly, your intention was that the first pass high-level policy issues would be the first step in a PDP proper. So before that, there needs to be the issues report, right? Is that correct, Denise?
Yes. And then Marika can give more details, yes.
Okay, cool. And the other question I had, and then I'll go to Susan, whose hand is up. I think it's worth considering, and comments from everybody on this would be very helpful, I think. At the bottom of your chart, you've got additional resources support for the PDP. And the one that, leaving aside the economic one for a second, the one that already on that list that Bruce talked about was the risk, he talked about it in relation to what Steve had said, but other things as well, is the risk impact assessment and so on. Have you considered whether any of those four bullet points would be things done before, so they would feed into the issues report, which is, I think, what Bruce was suggesting?
Yeah, Margie and Lisa may have a different perspective. I don't know. I'd like to actually give that some more thought personally.
Okay.
Margie and Lisa may have some other thoughts on this.
Margie?
Yeah, I mean, we've... you may recall, there has been a risk impact analysis done initially, you know, and as part of the EWG process. But part of what that effectiveness of that is really knowing what the model is, you know, as it evolves. And so there may be different times when you're going to do risk impact analysis. And so I'm not sure that it makes sense to do any more than has already been done at this point.
I think that's probably right, Chris. I think what you want to do is kept, you've got to kind of have a consistent framework and format. So
okay.
I think what the staff have done here is they've got a good framework, like here's the sets of policy issues.
Yeah.
I think you want to take the existing risks you've identified, and I agree, I don't think you need to do much more work on it, but take the existing risks that have been identified by the EWG and classify them into this framework, and then that's incorporated into the issues report. Now, obviously, risks will evolve over time, and you need to sort of pause and do risk analysis at different points of time. But let's capture what we have, because I think it's important that the issues report has a clear, here's the policy issues, here's some of the risks that have currently been identified against those classifications, and here's some of the measures that we might use or need to indicate whether each particular piece is doing its job or is sensible, et cetera.
Okay. Thanks, Bruce. Let's go back to the list. I've got Susan, Avery, Steve, and Lisa. Susan.
Thanks, Chris. Actually, you started down the thought process that I was wanting to get to. But I think we all need to take a step back in some ways. This is a great framework, and I'm impressed with the amount of work that's been done over the last week. But at the end of the day, if we don't get the buy-in from the community, this will not happen. So I'm not sure how we would go about doing this, but do we ask the community first? Do you want to stay with the existing who is, the current who is system? Do we want to move forward to a new system, whether it be some form of what the EWG came up with? So I think we should build that into our process. To do that and to ask that question, I think we need some of the legal analysis done. One of the questions that came as a member of the EWG that came to mind constantly in our discussions was, can the data be transferred? Can, you know, if the, you know, the registries in Virginia, the registrars in Panama, and the registrant is in Germany, how does that data have to be handled? I don't think we need to get into the nitty-gritty of each type of transfer of data or, you know, cross-border use of data, but I think we need to get a legal analysis done in that preliminary issues report to guide some of this, because we did work the work we did was, there were some assumptions, you know, we made some grand assumptions based on what has been currently happening. And also, you know, what is the risk of current who is system? Has there ever been a true analysis of that? We know what the current system is, so a risk analysis of that. We know some of those risks, but do we have a clear picture of the overall risk of the current system?
Okay. Thank you. Just a note for the recording that James has plus one that in the list and suggested that we'd also need to take a stab at some of the costs and what it would take to put it together. I'm going to carry on going through the list and we'll get back to that. Avery, you're next.
Yeah, thank you. This is Avery. In thinking about this, I mean, we're at a point now where we need to even do a policy process on the top level assumptions, on the top level policy issues that like, if I understood this whole issue properly, is that there was a analysis and, you know, all the way through to a possible solution done, but now in terms of stepping back, we have to go and we have to go through PDP on the high level policy issues and then a PDP on the second pass detailed policy issues. And I thought we were at a point of figuring out how indeed an issues report and then, you know, PDP/PDPs would deal with all of the policy issues. I think in terms of the analysis of the current situation, I do think that's more useful input that we could have. And so looking at, you know, the issues of what are the current problems, you know, what is the legal analysis, the risk assessment, et cetera, and how this would fit in with other work that's being done is part of the, you know, the issues report, certainly, and perhaps the work needs to be done before the issues report can be done. I'm not sure. But I want to make sure that what we're looking at is a notion of this table here, and I guess it needs a little bit more analysis, but this table here is what are many of the things that the policy process would have to go through, both first pass and second pass. Is that a correct, I mean, is that the operating assumption? Thanks.
If I understood you correctly, and you were fading in and out a little bit, but first of all, I think that the recommendation from Denise and Margie and Lisa is that you could do it as part of one process, but you would, step one would be the first pass, step two would be the second pass, so you don't have to launch two different PDPs. So that's a logistical piece. In respect to the first pass, I think my understanding is that if you just take permissible purposes and users as an example, the first pass for the GNSO would be, let's talk about what we think those permissible purposes should, or agree rather, what we think those permissible purposes should be, and who those users should be, and so on. So that would be the first pass, which I think accords with what you have just said. In respect to stuff we can do beforehand, where what seems to be happening, and within this conversation, and maybe I've misunderstood it, but what I think is happening is that there's a general feeling that some of the stuff that is listed in the bullet points at the bottom of the document could usefully be done to feed into the issues report, and or very early in the process, because the comparison of what's currently the case and what would be the case is relevant. And then the other outstanding question is the question of Susan's, which is is there a preliminary step before any of this, which is how do you get community buy-in? So that's kind of, I think, where we've got to. But Steve, you're next on the list.
Thank you very much. So I agree quite a bit with both Susan and Aubrey's input here, and I'm closely related to what I have in mind. Let me come at the point that I want to make in a couple of different ways. We are at this moment in the phase after the expert working group has delivered its report and prior to turning things over to the GNSO for policy development process. Now, Aubrey talked about a kind of a two-layer model in which things go, there's a top level that goes through the policy development process, and then I'm a little unclear about what that interplay is after that, and back to us perhaps, but a key point in my mind is what state do we want things to be in when this group finishes, takes its hand off, and turns it over to the GNSO and hopes for the best. And speaking for myself, I'd like to make sure that the risks and the key elements are thoroughly plumbed. So my view of the work that the expert working group did is I have enormous appreciation for what they did, but it's inherent in the structure of that kind of process that however many things they looked into and worked out solutions for, there's inevitably other aspects, and we know some of them, which were left for the future. The future is now here, and I don't want to be in the position that when we move this down the block to the GNSO, that there are significant hard pieces that are not dealt with. And so I'm going to be looking at this from that point of view and pushing very hard for us to make sure that we've done a thorough analysis of these loose ends. And so the cost analysis, the buy-in from the community, the fact that it will actually solve the problems that are claimed to, that there's a workable transition plan, and perhaps others are the key things. So the main point that I'm making here is that at the juncture where we think we're done, my view of we'll be done is when we are genuinely comfortable that we're presenting the GNSO with a workable, with something that all of the main risks have been dealt with, and that their job is relatively easy. It won't be trivial, but it'll be easy in the sense that there's a high probability of a success, and it's mainly a choice among reasonable options as opposed to a bunch of unsolved problems that have been kicked down the road.
Thank you. There's a couple of points to sort of come back on that, but before that, Avery, your hand is up again, I think. Susan, is your hand up? Hang on a second, Avery. Susan, is your hand up for a new one, or is it just not taken down?
Sorry, I didn't take it down.
No problem. Avery, you're on.
Okay, thanks. And apologies for being in and out. I think it's the nature of using Skype instead of Adobe Connect itself. So I think in terms of community buy-in, I think that's, you know, a full and appropriate PDP is the only way. When I look at these first pass and second pass issues and I look at them, that basically the first pass, for example, looking at the first one, is for the permissible purposes and users, and that part of that question is for each of the possible solutions or answers to that question, you have to answer the second pass issues. So it's only like it really is like the requirements on the PDP have to say, okay, what are the permissible purposes and users? And then assuming the ones that you've picked, what would be the data elements, the processes and such, so that all of that would be put in, and that if the original issue, if the issue of permissible purposes and users came out differently than the EWG came out with it, then the data elements, et cetera, would be different or could be different also, and that so I'm not quite sure how much in this you can do on the second pass if you haven't yet, looking at the EWG as just a
Avery, you're really breaking up, so it's getting harder and harder to hear you, but I think I've got the essence of what you're saying.
Okay, I'm going to have to try and call in a different way, obviously, because this isn't working.
Let me push back a little bit on what you just said, because in part, unless I've misunderstood you, in part what I think you said is it wouldn't be possible to agree what the permissible purposes were unless you I'm going to talk to as if I was involved in this. I wouldn't be prepared to agree what the permissible purposes are until I know what data elements are going to be acceptable. Because by linking, if I understood you correctly, you're linking the first. You're saying I can't reach an agreement on the first part, the high level policy issue, without understanding the second one. And I'm not sure that if I've understood you correctly, I'm not necessarily sure that I agree with that. But I take the point. But perhaps you could. I know it's really hard for you at the moment to speak. So perhaps you could, if you want to send a note in to the list, that would be really, really helpful. And I know that's not what you said or what you meant, so I did misunderstand you. So it was harder to hear you than I thought. Lisa, you're next.
Thanks, Chris. So I just wanted to sort of step back a bit on the permissible purposes and users and point out that there's a first step of actually accepting a paradigm in which data is only made available for permissible purposes and to users that have those purposes. Once you agree on that as a foundational step, then you have to go down the path of identifying, well, what are those purposes and who are those users? So I just don't want to skip over that first step, which is actually a pretty foundational decision in establishing the requirements to go forward.
Yeah. Thanks, Lisa. Shireen, you're next.
Chris. I'd like to make a suggestion here regarding the implementation issue column. In the material sent to us, it says the implementation column would begin following the completion of the PDP. To me, that could be sort of like 12 months or a year later. I would like to suggest something different, to break this implementation issue column into two columns. One is a high level and one detail level. And I'd like the high level to be part of the PDP. And the reason I'm saying that is that you have to do some high-level technical design as you're doing the PDP to ensure that whatever the PDP is coming up with is implementable. Otherwise, we could go down the policy for 12 months only to realize later down the road that technically it can't be done. So I think it would be a good thing to consider to break that implementation into two columns. One is a high level, and make that part of the PDP, and leave the detail later on for proper implementation. I don't know what the reaction of the group is. And that
Thanks, Shireen.
What we did in the past.
No, that certainly makes sense to me. Denise, I've got Ray next, but Denise, did you particularly want to respond to Shireen's point before I go to Ray?
Yeah, just to respond to Shireen's point, I think we could show a track where there's a parallel sort of a potential implementation, sort of validation and design work that parallels the progression of the policy decisions, so you have a stronger linkage as the policy and decisions are evolving.
Okay. I'm going to suggest that what I'm going to suggest, because I want to move on to Steve's point in a minute, and Ray, I'm coming to you in a second, is that you guys take what we've got, the conversation today, and where we end up, and then redraft what we've got, and maybe come up with some alternatives, including perhaps putting Shireen's additional column in, see what that looks like, do a flow chart, and so on. Is that a sort of okay end game call for you, Denise? Thank you.
Yes, absolutely.
Right, over to you.
Thanks, Chris. Back to Shireen's point, I agree, in fact, that when that column being labeled implementation issues, I thought that's exactly what was going to happen, was that issues with implementation were going to be identified, because one of the analyses that has to be done while you're doing policy is an impact analysis in terms of what it would take to do it. Shireen is absolutely correct. If you go down the road and say, okay, this is what we want to do, and then you say we can't do it, we've wasted time. So it's not the matter of implementing it right away. It's a matter of identifying implementation. You may also, in the process of doing that, come up with a better way of implementing it other than what might be the assumed way of doing it. So definitely, along with a risk analysis, a liability analysis, you also have to have a resource analysis as well in terms of implementation.
Yeah.
And that includes time, talent, and treasure.
Thanks, Ray. Absolutely. I want to wind up this part now and move on to Steve's meta point. So last call for any further comments before Denise and Margie and Lisa take this away and rework it based on our conversation today. Nope. Okay. So, with Avery, I know you're having real trouble hearing, so apologies for that. We'll move on now then to the meta point that Steve raised. Steve, could I ask you just to briefly run through it again for us, just so that we're all on the same page of what we're actually talking about, please?
I think the point that you're asking me, and I'm because I made a couple of points, but
the email that you sent earlier on.
Oh, the email.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So that's a different segment of the thought. So the email that I sent this morning, or whenever I sent it, was that if we step outside of our the bubble that we're in and take a look at what we're trying to do, we're trying to replumb this entire system with the objective of improving along multiple dimensions. We want to improve the accuracy of the who is information, but even there, the question is, so who cares what's the purpose? And the purpose is
to improve the enforcement for law enforcement, to improve the enforcement for intellectual property and perhaps for some others, but those two are sufficient for what I'm saying now. And at the same time, we want to protect the users in a better way, which is why we have tiered access instead of open access. And so that speaks to the privacy community and to others. So at the end of the day, let's assume we go through all of this, we implement it, we impose this tremendous cost on everybody. Have we, in fact, made an improvement, and how would we know? And I think it's important to put those questions right at the top as we move forward. And to make the point a little more strongly, we actually tried to have the conversation about whether or not the improvements in WHOIS are, in fact, doing what law enforcement has claimed that they would do. And the bad news is that the law enforcement community apparently is not keeping records in a way that would allow any relationship between our improved WHOIS mechanisms, WHOIS data, and anything that they're seeing. Now, that strikes me as an unpleasant position for us to be in. We do know already that the registrar community is coming back to us just on the improvements that are being imposed on WHOIS under the registration accreditation agreement and saying, look, we've got a million domain names that have been taken down, which we think represent actual harm to the existing set of users for no visible benefit. Now, I'm not prepared to say, well, therefore we shouldn't do anything further, but I do think it raises quite appropriately the question of can we close the loop on this? Can we get the larger community, speaking particularly about the law enforcement community, to provide the data not only to us but to the world in general so that there is a definite case to be made that these improvements, these changes that we're making, are actually worth the cost of doing that. The analogy that I often use is that if the chief of police comes to the city council and says, I need more cops on the beat, the city council, and it'll cost you $500,000, say, the city council is well within its right to say, here's your $500,000, but you better show us at the end of the year that various important statistics, like how many muggings have taken place, have genuinely been reduced. So it's that sort of thing that I'm looking for here, and I think we're going to have to not just go to the GNSO, and we know the constituencies are in GNSO, but we're going to have to reach outside of the existing structure and really engage and tell them, look, you've got to do the homework necessary and put in place whatever changes are necessary so that this is a fully cooperative arrangement and not just you put pressure on us, we've made changes, and you get to say thank you very much, and we get to say, gee, that didn't taste so good, and then be left open to the criticism that we bowed under to law enforcement without having anything to show for it.
Okay. I thank you, Steve. I've got a couple of things to come back on you on that. But, Denise, did you want to say something, and then I've got Susan.
Yes. Thank you. So, Steve, then to bring this into the context of this working group's discussion, are you suggesting that we include sort of policy guidance requirement for metrics, data gathering, and reporting of any new system that emerges from a new GNSO policy? And that we need to work that into the sort of table and flow chart of issues that should be addressed. Is it that? And is it, or in addition to that, is it that we also want to give some more thought to data and research that's done as part of the policy development process?
Well, I think it fits into your first model, but it will not be acceptable in my mind for the GNSO to come back and say, well, we can't get the data you're looking for, and therefore we're not going to bother, or we're just going to leave it out. I think we should not go forward until there is a workable agreement across the globe on how this is going to work. And this is our opportunity, for example, to engage the law enforcement community, not just in terms of the people who are going after the bad guys, but their bosses and their superstructure to say, look, we are prepared to make a substantial change in a core part of the way the Internet works, but you have to work on your part as well and help build your part of the ecosystem so that there's appropriate feedback here. It will help your case, we can say to law enforcement, and it will help our case as well. And I'm just picking out law enforcement because they're the easiest and most straightforward to deal with, but meaning to talk about, not the authority to deal with. But the same kind of conversation, I think, should take place with each of the other major establishments, with the intellectual property enforcement community and with the privacy community in the other direction. We have all of these concerns that we're going to be making it much worse from a privacy point of view. I think that they, too, should be asked to speak and organize their activities in a way that are meaningful and measurable.
So, Steve, I've got thank you. Susan and Sharina next. But before I go to Susan, just a clarification point, Steve. You're suggesting this working group does that? Or
well,
it's part,
now,
of the policy,
that's,
it's part of the PDP.
That's the key question. What I'm suggesting is that I'm not prepared to end our control at this working group level and cast off to the GNSO until these issues are sorted out. So that's said in somewhat broad terms, because I don't want to overspecify this. But I think one of the ways in which the policy development processes have failed in the past is that they've been presented with things that are fundamentally too complicated to deal with within the confines of the usual PDP and haven't had the ability to either recognize it or step outside of it and get leverage on it. So I think it falls to us to assess that. And if the result, for example, is, gee, this is really a whole lot harder than we know what to do with, and we don't want to turn it over to the GNSO, then I think we need to be creative and say, let's back up a bit and go cause those studies and conversations to take place. Just like we kicked off the expert working group, it would not be out of line, wouldn't be my first choice, but it may be necessary that we kick off comparable working group with outside experts in these various fields and say, look, if you really care about us going down this direction, you need to apply the missing pieces here. It's not within our capability to go and invent the measures for how effective the law enforcement is.
Okay. Let's go to Susan, Shireen, and then James, and then I'll come back. Susan.
Thank you. So, Steve, I think you made some fair points. And I can't speak for law enforcement, obviously, but and I don't have the luxury of you know, the registrars all talk, you know, and bring statistics together sometimes that IP owners don't always share. But anecdotally, I can see a marked difference in my own domain name enforcement for Facebook. So that is something that could be tracked, and if we define those, you know, meaningful and measurable data points, that and we could collect those, I think, you know, I could definitely spearhead an initiative if we could come to agreement on what we're looking for. But specifically, I think the improvement in the Whois inaccuracy reporting tool and how the registrars respond and compliance, the compliance team's activities in ensuring that there is a response and acting if there isn't has made a marked difference. And so do I think we should stay with the old Whois system? Absolutely not. But I think we could come up with some statistics that will show an improvement, but we still have a long way to go. So I agree we should do this in a way that's not too burdensome, but and I'd be more than willing to work on that.
I think that would be, if I can respond just quickly, I think that would be very helpful, Susan. the anecdotal information from you will be, as I said, very helpful. I don't know that it will be sufficient, but I think it will be a good beginning, and it will be very helpful in response to the kind of anecdotal information that we are seeing pushing back on the improvements that have been made already. And I think that it will that this tension, this back and forth, and whatever contributions you're able to make will serve as a good calling card for engaging the larger is the wrong word, the superstructure in the law enforcement community.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Steve. Shireen, you're next.
I think Steve brings an important point here, which the analogy in my mind in developing these large databases, the PDP in a way is kind of represent a user requirement / user design. Usually there is a sign-off by someone called the user. And what we don't have here is clarity who is that user and who's signing off on behalf of the user. And what Steve is saying is that it isn't enough that the registrar and the registries and the registrar sign off on this, that there are other bodies like the law enforcement, like other things, that also are participants in that ecosystem that also have to sign off. So I think, I suggest here, is that we should add one more policy that we need to discuss among us in the first high pass, which is sort of sign off of the participant in the ecosystem. And let's discuss whether we then recommend that the GNSO or some is responsible for obtaining that sign off from the other rest of the ecosystem community. So I would suggest adding one more to our policy, our high pass policy, and discuss who's going to sign off on this, so that at the end, when this is handed over to staff or someone to build this, they have absolute confidence that the entire members and participants in the ecosystem, not only those represented by the GNSO, but the entire body, has signed off on this and is in agreement.
Thank you, Shireen. James?
Thanks, Chris. And so naturally, I'm fairly empathetic to what Steve is proposing. I think that, you know, as registrars, we are seeing disruptions. We're not necessarily on the side of the equation where we can see any kind of benefits. And I think that before we, you know, undertake this Manhattan Project level undertaking within our industry, we need to understand who's going to benefit and how these questions are going to be resolved before we just dive in and start you know, disrupting it further. You know, I think that in some ways we can decouple the system from the data, and it might be helpful to think of them separately. I mean, the WHOIS system that we have today could work if everyone, including criminals, were honest. You know, it's based somewhat on the honor system, and I think that you know, the new system that we could go to great lengths and great expense to build a new system, only to find that this you know, is later filled with polluted data as well. You know, several years down the road. So I think that separating those two might be helpful in wrestling with this question of tracking the success of what we're or measuring and defining success and then tracking towards that. And I think that that also can roll up into the overall questions of the economics of making this change, because I believe that as long as the beneficiaries of an improved system are separate from those who would be burdening the costs of an improved system, I think that we will find ourselves continuously in the situation where those asking for improvements and those asking for additional requirements are at odds with those who are tasked with implementing them. So all those things, I think, could be rolled up into just the general economic study of who are the producers of WHOIS data, who are the consumers, and what are we willing to pay to chase that last decimal point of accuracy.
Thanks, James. I'm going to put myself in the queue now because I want to make a distinction between what we're doing now and what we've done in the past. So the problem that we're currently facing with existing who is in my view different to the problem that we the challenges that we're dealing with on the new recommendation. Steve's point is that I'm wary about conflating what's happening in the who is right now with what may happen with the next generation, because they're coming from two entirely different starting points. The changes that we made to the current who is model were led, pushed by law enforcement through the GAC, and claims were made that these were essential to help law enforcement and that there would be significant benefit to them. What we heard in our meeting in Los Angeles and at other times has been that there are significant downsides to this and that there is no evidence that we have been told that that the changes were made have indeed done what law enforcement said that they would, and that therefore we shouldn't proceed to the next step of changes to the existing who is until we have proof, evidence, whatever, that the first set of changes that we made were valuable and did what they were intended to do. I'm not sure that you can then simply plonk that discussion and argument over onto the recommendations for next generation registry services, because apart from anything else, we didn't start that process and follow that process to achieve greater openness for law enforcement or to make law enforcement's life easier. What we did was to acknowledge what we were told was that the system was broken. I'm using shorthand. The system was broken and that we needed to create a new one from scratch. And so what we did was set out to achieve that, to design a better system. And it may be a result of that that it makes it easier for law enforcement to be accredited and to get hold of data in certain circumstances. And it may be a result of that that it's easier for individuals to protect their privacy. But those weren't the goals. So I'm not sure that you can fairly just completely push the two pieces together. I'm not suggesting there isn't that we shouldn't do some work on what the results would be, but I'm just very, very concerned about having a discussion that you know uses the existing problem that we've got as a challenge within our new one.
I don't. With apologies, I'm not sure I see the distinction that you're making, Chris. To me, both efforts are driven by fundamentally the same thing: how to improve the effectiveness of the system for the people who need the data, and how to reduce the impact on the people who are negatively affected, in broad terms. And in both cases, it's not only legitimate but required that we ask the questions: are these things measurable? How would you know whether you've made an improvement?
So I agree with that, Stephen. Maybe I didn't make myself clear. So first of all, are they measurable? Couldn't agree more. But I think what I was trying to say was that the changes made to WHOIS were pushed upon us through law enforcement, through the GAC, and after they were pushed through as a, we have to do this, it's incredibly important. What we've got over on the other side of the fence is a recommended system that's been created specifically to try and improve on the existing system. So I've got no issue with measuring, I've got no issue with metrics. I'm just concerned about if law enforcement doesn't prove to us that what the expert working group recommends is better for them, we shouldn't do it. Because that's, I think, applicable to where we sit on the other side of the equation with who is, but I'm not sure that it's applicable with the new recommendations. Is that any clearer?
I'm uncomfortable with the conditional that you put in there. You've posed it as a choice between basically what happens if they don't show us that it's an improvement.
Yes.
Do we proceed anyway? And I think your answer is yes. And my answer is not exactly a no. It is essential that they show us, and we shouldn't proceed until they show us, but it is to their advantage, and it is necessary, I think, from a larger societal point of view that these things do be connected. So you can read that in the extreme as if they don't show us we shouldn't proceed, but I want to cast it in a more positive but nonetheless strongly coupled way that it that these are connected and that they must show us and that we shouldn't proceed without making sure that they're coupled.
Can you add me to the queue as well, please, Chris?
Yeah, Shireen, is your hand up for the old question or a new one?
No, no, it's the old question. I'll put my hand down.
Okay, Avery, you're next, then Bruce.
Hey, this is Avery. Hopefully I can be heard better this time.
You sound like the old Avery that we know and love.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I guess I'm getting confused listening to all this because I think we're skipping a step. All of a sudden, we're talking about, or at least it sounds to me like we're talking about taking the EWG and sort of report and sort of saying, does the solution work for the policy assumptions we're making? And I thought we had to drop back and basically look at the policy assumptions, make sure that those policy requirements are indeed the policy requirements that, you know, are bottom-up established through a PDP process. Now, in the process of doing that, we have, this is a very rich set of resources to look at to see, you know, what they did, and it could save us going down unproductive pathways. But I really think we're missing that first step when we say, take this and start looking at, does it solve the problems? When we haven't yet had the policy issues that looked at all these first pass issues and said, yep, that's a problem that we need to solve, and we need to solve it in this way. We have these requirements. Does the EWG respond to these requirements? Are these the same requirements they had? And moves from there. So I think that picking up the EWG solution path and saying that's our starting place is problematic. Thanks.
Thanks, Avery. Bruce?
Yeah, I just want to just pick up. I mean, Steve's kind of narrowly defining the problem as, you know, we're doing all this for law enforcement. That's probably an overly narrow interpretation, and it probably gives rise to a lot of problems, actually, because as James has pointed out, and I'm work for a registrar as well. In fact, I just went through a case that was for an ICANN staff member's wife. Was done with identity fraud, and I said that would pass every single check that the RAA 2013 put in place. And in fact, I rarely see anything that's truly criminal activity that would be fixed by the changes to the RAA 2013. In other words, we're using the wrong tools for the wrong problem. I think what we should be looking at is the system needs to serve the wider community. There's lots of users of WHOIS, so we should be focusing on not just the negative case of someone doing something illegal, but the positive case, which is, you know, the original purpose of WHOIS, which allows people to contact the party responsible for the address record and make sure that we're providing a benefit for the average user, not just for the police officer.
And Bruce, thank you. I did not mean for my remarks to be taken narrowly for law enforcement. I chose law enforcement as one of, that's just the easiest from where I was sitting to talk about, but I 100% agree with you.
Thank you, Bruce and Steve, and I agree with that too. I think we should remember that in the report, in the experts working group report, this is actually addressed to a great extent because it talks not so much buy-in, but it talks about here are the purposes that we believe are permissible, here are the users that should have access to them. So it's not, I'm not sure that the starting point of this was how to make it easier for anybody or harder for anybody. The starting point was, what are the permissible purposes? What do we think are the permissible purposes, and what hoops should people need to jump through in order to get to those purposes? So I think we're going to need to move on because we're coming to a close of the call. And Margie, I know your hand is up, but I can see that we've got a discussion developing here on a sort of slightly, on a, it's not a side issue at all, but it is an issue. It actually shoots back to buy-in to some extent. I think it shoots back to Susan's original point about. How do we know that we've got buy-in? I have a particular issue with law enforcement, Steve, or rather with the way that it's worded, because I'm not entirely sure that we know who law enforcement are, and I'm not entirely sure that there is a community of law enforcement, and certainly at the experience we had with Whois and the changes that were, you know, required, demanded, etc., were pushed through the GAC by a very, very small number of representatives of law enforcement from a very, very small number of countries. So I have, at a much higher level, a question about how you would work out you would get buy-in from law enforcement. You know, law enforcement from China, law enforcement from Russia, law enforcement from the UK. Now, there is no... Is it Interpol, Europol? But I don't want to... You know, it's a much bigger discussion to be had here, and I think it would be really useful if we could maybe try and have that intersessionally on the list to move this further on till before the next call. Would that be useful for you, Steve, if we could start exchanging some emails on it?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Yes, I suspect that we have to, that this will be one of the larger issues, that although there are a lot of very hairy system issues to be dealt with, I think
yeah.
this will be even more important.
Okay, good. Margie, did you want to say something, or have you put your
No, I think the conversation's moved, and I think you're right about kind of going to the next step.
Okay. Denise, Margie, would you like to just sort of tell us what you're going to do after this call so that we know what to expect before the next call?
Well, I think we'd like to confer and then put it back out on the email list just for certainty, but clearly we're going to take the comments and suggestions we got and update this table, also produce a flow chart and something that also shows dependencies as we've discussed. Margie, I think we need to discuss some of the other issues that were raised and how to support the discussion moving forward. But Margie, do you have some others?
Right. Well, we also want to figure out when the next call would be. I think two weeks out is what we were suggesting. Is that still, Chris, you wanted to come back to that to figure out the frequency of the call?
Yeah, yes. I mean, from my own experience of actually getting these things done and having a standing call every couple of weeks is probably gives us the best opportunity. But it is a matter for, does anybody have a problem with us having a sort of standing two-week call? Doesn't seem like anyone has a problem with that. So can we maybe put in place, Charlotte, and could maybe put in place a sort of doodle poll to get the right time for the call and the right day for the call, and then just roll it every 2 weeks?
Sounds good.
Chris, this is Ram.
Yes, Ram.
I'm okay with a standing call so long as we have an idea of what we're going to be discussing. I don't want to have a call just so that we get on a call.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that as well. I noticed Ram's comment too. I found the papers are a little bit too close to the meeting for my benefit. I think 2 weeks almost sounds too often, Chris, unless
right.
you think we're going to get major progress every 2 weeks.
No, I'm happy, that's why I asked the question. So two things. One, Denise, well, I don't know if either of you were on the call at the very beginning, but Denise did say that the goal would be to get certainly the notes from the meetings out within 3 days of the end of the meeting. Is that right, Denise?
Yes, and the material and agendas for the next meeting out at least a week in advance of the call.
All right.
If you start talking about that, you're basically saying you've got a week to get something done
yeah.
if you're going to get material a week before the next call. So I think monthly sounds like a more reasonable frequency when we're assuming we're looking at
okay.
a major piece of material.
I'm fine with that. We can always ramp it up if we need to, right? So
sure.
if that's okay with everybody, then why don't we agree to have a call in late November, send out a doodle poll for that, get the documents, get the redrafts of stuff out to us as soon as possible, and start the discussion on the email list about the meta points that Steve raised.
Right. If we could couple that with the moving the evolving the discussion over the email list, I think this would be useful. I'm a bit concerned that once a month will make this quite a lengthy process. But if,
sure.
if people are comfortable also addressing this on the email list, I think that could work.
Agreed. So let's. One of the ways to do that, Denise, is to work to get the documentation, the redrafts of stuff done. Ignore the week deadline before the call and actually get them done as quickly as possible, so that we can start discussion on the list.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, and then that way we'll questions can be asked and so on the list, and if necessary, some of us can just post incendiary emails to the list to encourage people to. All right. Any last points before we close up the call? I think we've got a clear between now and what we're going to do for the next call. So, anything else?
No, thank you very much, Chris. I appreciate you running the call. And thank you, everybody, for stimulating discussion. I don't know how long this is going to take to respond to your point, Denise, but I'm, if it's a question, as we've said several times, between doing it quickly and doing it right, in this particular case, I'm 100% tuned toward picking our way carefully and thoroughly.
Sure.
All right. Thank you very much indeed, everybody. Talk to you all soon.
Thank you.
Thanks,
everyone.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.